Hello, welcome back to another episode of In the Money. I'm Konstantin Vrondopoulos with Fidelity's Trading Strategy Desk. Very excited to be back in the hot seat hosting this show. It's been a couple of weeks for me. Alongside me, I have my friend Tony Zhang, Chief Strategist at Options Play. Tony, how goes it?
Hey V, it's good to see you. It's been quite a few weeks in the market, 6 weeks or so of just pure roller coaster. The last few weeks, we really have gone from what I would say is cautiously optimistic now to what is almost approaching a euphoric tone here for the broader markets. The last week have really been driven by headlines, particularly out of the trade war negotiations with China and the rollback of those reciprocal tariffs with China and the 90-day pause, rolling it back to 10%, has given the market an incredible amount of ammo to not only reclaim the April 2nd levels that we saw before the market sold off on what I call the tariff tantrum, but now the S&P 500 is positive on the year for 2025. A few weeks ago, I didn't think we'd get anywhere close to where we are right now. So the fact that we are here is pretty miraculous. So it does start to raise some questions about, are the markets a little bit too optimistic right now? And I think that is something that we need to start considering as we start approaching some major resistance levels ahead. We did see that lower than expected CPI print here earlier this week, and that's starting to paint a picture that perhaps some of the concerns that tariffs are going to create a certain amount of inflation is perhaps a little bit overblown, or at least there's some signs that retailers in the last month have sort of absorbed any temporary price increases. And what's really interesting for me is the fact that 10-year yields continue to climb. We approach 4.5% today on the 10-year yield. And right now we're still only pricing in two rate cuts here for the rest of the year, starting in September. And that largely remains consistent with Powell's comments that he's not in a hurry to cut rates, despite the fact that, inflation continues to trend in the right direction. And even in the face of tariffs, seemingly inflation is still continuing to move in the right direction. So, that is something that we have to consider. And, about at this point, 90% of S&P 500s have reported earnings. And so far, earnings season has been quite robust. And we've seen a fair amount of optimistic guidance for the rest of 2025. Even though we saw a record number of companies pull their guidance here for 2025, the companies that did provide guidance is actually looking quite positive here overall compared to historical averages. So, valuations right now is certainly still in the high end. We're trading at about 20 and a half times forward earnings. We have seen revenue growth decelerate to about 4.5% year over year. That is something that concerns me a little bit. EPS growing nicely is great, but when revenue is not growing so much, that's always a bigger concern. So if we look at, out of all of this information, how the markets have reacted, what's really interesting to me is that the S&P 500 punched above 5,800, that resistance level that we've been talking about for the last few weeks, with ease. And at this point, we're very much marching on towards those all-time highs at 6,100, which is our base case right now to the upside.
Yeah, Tony, there's lots to unpack there. Very interesting things happening under the hood. You mentioned interest rates earlier this morning. The TNX, which is the CBOE interest rate index, printed above 4.5, currently somewhere around 4.45% as we're speaking, and it's been steadily climbing since April 30th. April 30th was the most recent swing low. We bottomed at around 4.124%. So the math that you're mentioning on the S&P 500 trading at 20 and a half times next 12 months earnings. How does this math work out for anyone in the audience? So effectively, Wall Street analysts currently expect approximately about $270 worth of earnings out of the S&P 500 in the next year. You divide that into the current price of the S&P, somewhere around 5,900, and you come up with the yield of, let's round it up, 4.6% or so. So the risk-free rate on the 10-year Treasury note is 4.45, and the earnings yield is 4.6%. So what gives? I guess growth expectations, of course, can offset the risk-free yields rising and rising substantially, but there needs to be this revived growth expectation from Wall Street analysts. And not only that, it kind of has to be proven by the corporations actually meeting those expectations and those numbers moving forward. So, Tony, are you seeing the revived growth expectations from sell side analysts that you're following? That's question number one. Question number two, what do you make of this divergence? And do you think that it's going to start mattering at some point?
Yeah, that's a really great call out, KV, first of all, on the difference between the risk-free yield and the equity risk premium. Here's a couple of things that I think we should discuss, right? First of all, to answer your question with regards to our sell side analysts seeing a more optimistic 2025. And so the short answer to your question is, to start off the year, analysts sort of set the bar pretty low because there were some signs early on in the year. I don't know if you remember, Delta put out some pretty poor guidance here at the beginning of 2025 that really spooked a lot of investors about, how consumers are going to spend here for this year. And analysts, subsequently lower their expectations quite a bit here for Q1. So we had a pretty low bar that we had set. But corporations, for Q1 came in pretty strong. Not only do we have above average beats, we also had those beats, in terms of size, were above average. So that's what I mean in terms of Q1 results were quite robust. At the same time, we also continue to see analyst expectations for the second half of 2025 actually continue to be revised higher. Higher, not only has it been revised higher, it's been revised higher faster than average. So, the analysts are at the moment still expecting a fairly resilient 2025 from corporate earnings at the moment. Now, I will say that some of that, or a lot of that, is from more cyclical sectors like technology, even energy, one of the biggest sectors seeing the biggest revisions higher here. So, it's hard to say for sure where we're going to land here for the rest of the year, but your question about when does the calculus matter with regards to the difference between the risk-free rate and the equity risk premium is the fact that if we do see 10-year yields get above 4.5% and stay above 4.5%, let's say we start getting to the 4.7, 4.8 level, that's really where you do have to start reconsidering. Where do you put your money, right? Because if you have a risk-free rate of around 4.8% and equities, yield is only about 4.5%, that certainly makes equities a lot less compelling given the equity risk that you have to take there. So, I do think that yields have to be a little bit higher from where they are, or corporate earnings have to be meaningfully lower from here in order to actually see some multiple contraction here. We're trading at 20 and a half times forward earnings. We need to see the 10-year yield closer to about 4.7 and 4.8, really for investors to start shifting their capital around, in my opinion.
Thank you, Tony. That's a very thorough answer. Everyone in the audience, including myself, appreciates your thoughts. I don't want anyone in the audience to feel like I'm the bad omen for the bulls. Last time I was hosting the show was April 10th, and the markets were trading just a little north of 4,800 at the time. So here we are at north of 5,900, so 1,100 points pretty much in a straight line in the matter of 5 weeks. And so, what I want to remind our listeners here today is that it's always good to be thinking about risk management when things look and feel pretty rosy. So, having those targets in place and thinking about what and if. And how you're going to go about it if they do come about. So, Tony, you mentioned 4,800 was the previous resistance. We punched through that level. What are your thoughts? If the S&Ps, let's say, get acceptance back below that 5,800 level to the downside, what would be your first targets?
Yeah, first of all, thank you so much for calling that out in terms of thinking about downside. You should always think about downside first. How much downside would you have to take if you were to go long in this market right now? And I think, If we look at the S&P 500, we break below 5,800, which is the double top that we just broke out above. The first level of support that I see to the downside doesn't come in until 5,350, basically in the congestion zone of that sell-off that we saw here after April 2nd. Below that, we're looking at 5,100. And then below that, we see the swing low of the April 2nd sell-off here. So, those are the important levels that I think I'd be looking at to the downside. And you mentioned the fact that we've had basically a straight line for the last 5 weeks. Straight lines in 5 weeks always scare me a little bit when you have that much momentum in one direction for that amount of time without any form of consolidation or check back or pullback. So I think in the short run, I think a pullback is potentially on the cards in the next couple of weeks.
Sounds good. Tony, given that backdrop, let's get into the options piece of the equation here. What are you looking at? What underlying and what strategies?
Yeah, I want to take a look at Lam Research because, it's hard to not try to ride this wave of momentum and euphoria that we see here in the broader markets. And that's been, the semiconductor space has lagged behind the S&P 500 for the last 9 months. And we're starting to see that come back to life a little bit. And I think there's some opportunities in some of the semiconductor stocks like Lam Research. So, we see that the pressures that have been alleviated by the trade war reduction, if you will, over the past week or so. Lam Research, one of the largest wafer fabrication companies with somewhat compelling valuations, I think, at the moment. And with industry-leading profitability, I think the timing is pretty optimal to start adding some bullish exposure to semis overall, and specifically in Lam Research. If we take a look at a chart here, you see that the stock has been trending lower for the better part of the last year, but it recently just broke out from a bearish trend line around that $82 level. And I see some upside here now that we've broken out, because not only has it broken out above that trend line, it's outperforming the market and its sector. And those are some of the things I really like to see on breakouts that suggest that there's further upside here. And my upside target here is all the way around that 113 level, which is the 52-week high. So I think the risk to reward ratio right now for adding a bullish exposure here to a stock like Lam Research looks incredibly attractive. And then if you look at the business here, it's trading at around 21 times forward earnings, which is a meaningful discount to the industry, which is trading around 25 times forward earnings, especially if you consider both top and bottom line growth for Lam Research is effectively in line with the industry. So you're looking about EPS growth around 16%, revenue growth around 11%. Those are very much in line with the industry. But what Lam Research excels at is profitability. And that is one of the most important metrics that I look at to determine whether a stock is undervalued or undervalued. And the stock is currently has net margins around 27% versus the industry is around 10.5%. So we're talking about efficiency that's more than double what the industry averages, yet it trades at a pretty substantial discount relative to the industry. So from my perspective, I see from a valuation perspective, substantial upside from where we are that would justify my 113 upside target here that I see on the underlying charts that can be supported from a valuation perspective. So I think the best way to play this is to use a limited risk strategy. Given the current market environments that we're in, I am still concerned about potential pullbacks in the market. So I think the best way to trade a structure like this is to try to take out as little risk as possible and get about a 2-to-1 risk to reward ratio on this type of trade. So I'm looking at going out to the June 27th weekly expiration. I'm looking at buying the 85 by 95 call vertical. And what that means is I'm buying the $85 call options, and I'm going to spend about $3.70 to buy that. And I'm going to sell the $95 calls against that, collecting about 77 cents. That's a net debit around $2.93 for this $10 wide debit spread. And what that means is that I'm risking only $293 per contract on a debit spread like this if Lamb Research is below $85 at expiration, but if it does rally above that $95 upper strike, my max potential profit here is around $707. So we're talking about a little bit more than 2-to-1 risk reward ratio, if I am correct. But the goal here is try to minimize the overall risk on the trade to about $293 per contract. And if you think about that relative to buying 100 shares of Lamb Research, you know, we're talking about 4% of the stock's value that we're risking here on the downside if it doesn't work out.
Yeah, Tony, very good. First of all, I want to say I very much appreciate your multifaceted approach to your analysis. Before you start thinking about what structure you're going to be choosing in order to engage with the market with, you evaluate your macro narrative and theme. You look at the fundamentals of the company. You then look at the technicals. You think about relative strength versus the peers versus the market. And only then you consider, hey, what is the implied volatility space looking like? And that underlying, what are the markets looking like? Liquidity, bid offer spreads, and then consider what strategy to pick. So it's a pretty wholesome approach. Tony, technicals are fairly straightforward. Options, dynamics, and details about implied volatility and liquidity, those could be tougher concepts, but we on the trading strategy desk host plenty of coaching sessions that kind of help you navigate that space using the tools and resources that we have here at Fidelity. I think the biggest problem or issue that the vast majority of newcomers to this world run into is how to wrap their heads around fundamental analysis. You don't have time to go back to college and get a finance degree or get your MBA or get your CFA. It could be very daunting. There's a lot of detail, what to pay attention to, and how to think about it. Well, folks, Fidelity has some resources to help you exactly with that process, with that evaluation. And I would be delighted to have you all who is willing to attend in my off-the-chart session on Friday at 4 o'clock Eastern. I will show you a few reports that will help you navigate that space. You could find those sessions by going to fidelity.com/coaching. But in terms of the strategy in and of itself, Tony, here we are. You pick the bull call spread. You are limiting your downside risk to the debit paid. You're hoping for the upside. You're using leverage. You have a 2-to-1 reward to risk type of a ratio. All of the things are kind of fitting. You picked the expiration cycle as 43 days out. So we got some time for this strategy to live and to work, either for us or against us. So the question is, what's normally in your tool belt for risk management techniques and purposes that you're thinking about right now before you click the button and pull the trigger, as well as maybe some profit targets in the short term? Sometimes underlyings move a lot faster than we anticipate. So do you have any rules of thumb that you follow?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, first of all, thank you so much for calling that out. It's really important that for any time, anyone who's trading option strategies, that before you enter your trade, before you execute your trade, that you should have an exit plan before you get in. You should know exactly when you plan on getting in and when you plan on getting out. And I would say that, with regards to when would I get out if the trade goes against me, or when would I get out when the trade goes in my favor. The side of when a trade goes against you, meaning if you're losing money on the particular trade, the rules for that should be very black and white. And the reason for that is because you want to try to remove as much emotion from the decision-making process if the trade doesn't go in your favor. So in this particular case, with a debit spread structure, the rule of thumb is always that if you lose 50% of the premium that you paid on a debit spread or a call option, anything that's a debit, that is a good time to start cutting your losses and move on, right? Because once you lose 50% of the premium that you pay for a long call or a debit spread like this, your chances of the trade being successful within the time frame of your trade is pretty low, that you're better off simply closing out your trade, saving the 50% that's still remaining for the next trade, rather than holding on to it, hoping that it's going to come back and turn back into a profitable trade. And by using, very clear rules like risking 50% of what you can potentially make and closing it out, you try to remove as much emotion as possible from that decision-making process, because it's not an easy process to say, oh, I'm wrong, let me close out my trade at a loss and solidify that loss, right? Because you're always, it's easier to just hang on and hope rather than taking on that loss. On the flip side, if the trade goes in your favor, well, that's where it turns into more of an art than a science, because you actually have a lot of options of what you can do when the trade goes in your favor. Rule of thumb that I typically use is that if a debit spread like this gains 100% of what I paid, it's time to start doing something with that trade, right? And that usually corresponds with the stock reaching the upper strike of the vertical spread. So usually if it reaches around that $95 strike price before expiration, you'll usually see close to about a 100% gain on your debit spread. And at that point, you can either simply close out the trade because perhaps $95 is your upside target. But if you're like me, because where you think the upside target is actually much higher, around 113, that's really where you would want to adjust your position. So that's where I would roll this trade out to a further expiration. You reset the strike prices. So let's say it's at 95. At that point, maybe I would buy a 95 by 105 call spread, or maybe 95, 110 call spread, something like that, where I'm giving myself further upside. So I'm taking my profits on my original trade, rolling into a new trade, and hoping to basically turn a small win into a home run if it does continue to extend into that 113 upside target that I have. But once a trade goes in your favor, you have a lot of different options. You have a lot of different things that you can do. And that's really where, as a trader, you should be spending most of your time and energy, is figuring out what to do with your winning trades. How do you adjust the winning trade into a bigger winning trade rather than focusing too much energy on losing trades? You really should be spending very little time on your losing trades. They should have clear-cut rules that you just simply follow. And then when your trades go in your favor, that's when you spend a little bit more time figuring out what best to do.
Excellent advice, Tony. As you mentioned a little bit earlier, 90% of market cap of the S&P 500 has already reported earnings. We're wrapping Q1 earnings season here. Any still, any specific names maybe that you're still watching or that are grabbing your attention, sir?
Yeah, earnings season is certainly winding down, but there's one name that still catches my eye that reports this afternoon, and that's Take-Two Interactive, the gaming software company. You know, it's currently trading around 32 times forward earnings, or about 5 times forward revenue. So really expensive on all fronts from a valuation perspective, especially if you consider the fact that they have failed to turn a net profit for 11 straight quarters. So for a company like that, that continues to fail to deliver profitability for their investors and trade at such high valuations, I see risks like downside risk with a stock like that, the reports after the close this afternoon. So I have a bearish view on Take-Two going into earnings this afternoon.
Very interesting, Tony. Speaking of managing risk and having hard and fast rules when it comes to losers, it looks like we have to manage a trade that didn't turn out so well.
Yeah, that's exactly right. A couple of weeks ago, I laid out a bearish trade here on Tesla. Basically, as you said, you know, we've been on a straight line higher. I thought that straight line higher was at a risk of a pullback, which is why I took a bearish view on Tesla, one of the most overvalued stocks in the markets here right now. We bought the June 285-240 put spread for about $16. So the same debit spread structure that we're using for Lam Research, but on the bearish side, we took that for Tesla. We bought that for around $16 for a debit spread. And once you lose more than 50% of the premium on a debit spread like this, you have to cut your losses and get out. It's trading around $4.40 right now, which means that we've exceeded the threshold of 50%. It's time to cut our losses and move on to the next trade.
Excellent, Tony. Sound advice there, folks. This brings us to a close. It went, the time flew by fast. Tony, thank you so much for your thoughts. Great show, sir.
Thank you so much, KB. It's always a pleasure to talk markets with you.
Thank you to all of our viewers. Want to remind everyone in the audience that the Trading Strategy Desk is 100% here for you. We're live in front of a mic and camera every single day for multiple hours a day. You can find everything that we do by going to fidelity.com/coaching. A reminder as well that there is an In the Money follow-up show that the Trading Strategy Desk hosts every Friday at 1:30 Eastern Standard Time. Special link to sign up for that event is fidelity.com/in-the-money follow-up. And don't forget, we have an active investor weekly newsletter that you can subscribe to as well for all things that are happening here at Fidelity Investments that are exciting. fidelity.com/active-investor-weekly. We will see you again next week. This wraps up this episode for In the Money. Take care, everybody. See you soon, Tony.
Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Options trading entails significant risk and is not appropriate for all investors. Certain complex option strategies carry additional risk. Before trading options, contact Fidelity Investments by calling 800-544-5115 to receive a copy of Characteristics and Risks of Standardized Options. Supporting documentation for any claims, if applicable, will be furnished upon request. There are additional costs associated with option strategies that call for multiple purchases and sales of options such as spreads, straddles, and collars as compared with a single option trade. Technical analysis focuses on market action, specifically volume and price. Technical analysis is only one approach to analyzing stocks. When considering which stocks to buy or sell, you should use the approach that you are most comfortable with. As with all your investments, you must make your own determination as to whether an investment in any particular security or securities is right for you based on your investment objectives, risk tolerance, and financial situation. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Greeks are mathematical calculations used to determine the effect of various factors on options. Views expressed are as of the date indicated, based on the information available at that time, and may change based on market or other conditions. Unless otherwise noted, the opinions provided are those of options play and are not necessarily those of Fidelity Investments or its affiliates. Fidelity does not assume any duty to update any of the information. News, commentary, market data, and research reports are from third-party sources unaffiliated with Fidelity, unless otherwise noted, and are provided for informational purposes only. Fidelity does not endorse or adopt third-party content. Fidelity makes no guarantee that the information supplied is accurate, complete, or timely, and does not provide any warranties regarding results obtained from their use.
Information provided in the podcast is general in nature, is provided for informational purposes only, and should not be construed as investment or tax advice. Fidelity Investments disclaims any liability for any direct or incidental loss incurred by applying any of the information in this podcast. This podcast is intended for U.S. persons only and is not a solicitation for any Fidelity product or service. This podcast is provided for your personal non-commercial use and is the copyrighted work of FMR LLC. You may not reproduce this podcast in whole or in part in any form without the permission of FMR LLC.
Any screenshots, charts, or company trading symbols mentioned are provided for illustrative purposes only and should not be considered as an offer to sell, a solicitation of an offer to buy, or a recommendation for the security. Options Play and Fidelity Investments are independent entities and are not legally affiliated. The third-party trademarks appearing herein are the property of their respective owners. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.